Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.
Well, happy Monday, everybody, and thank you so much for tuning in to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill. Today, I'm very excited to have with us Carolyn Thompson. Carolyn's passion is to help others by teaching, coaching, and motivating them in how to get ahead in their careers and in life. As principal of the Merito Group, she leads a team that performs executive search, contract labor placement, executive coaching, RPO, and human resources consulting services. A creative entrepreneur and a certified coach, Carolyn is regularly published on topics relating to job search and executive recruiting in various national magazines, trade journals, and on the internet as well. Carolyn is an active member of the International Coaching Federation and has been certified by them, NAPS, ASA, and in the past as a continuing education provider. She is a frequent speaker and has received rave reviews as an engaging and enthusiastic presenter on a variety of topics as a member of the National Speakers Association. Carolyn is a founding board chair of the Washington Women's Leadership Initiative and is also a member of the prestigious Pinnacle Society and has been an executive recruiter since 1988. As an alumni of Kansas State University, Carolyn is also the author of Resumazing, 10 Easy Steps to a Perfect Resume, Searchineering, 10 Steps to Finding the Perfect Jobs, and Promotication, 10 Secrets to Getting Promoted, all available on Amazon. Thank you so much, Carolyn, for joining us today. It's such an amazing resume that you have.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I don't even know where to start. Why don't you start maybe by telling our listeners a little bit about your history? How did you come to be focused on executive search and recruitment?
So I started in sales at a temporary agency and realized pretty quickly that there was more money in the direct hire search side. So I kind of moved over to that and then just kept taking on more and more responsibility, worked for a couple of large companies, a couple of smaller ones, embedded into a CPA firm for a while. And then I started my own company and here we are. This is actually the seventh company that I've started in my career. So you might say sometimes people call me a serial entrepreneur, but this is the seventh one I've started.
Wow. So are you still running all seven companies or did you sell some of the other ones? Mm.
No, just four. I have four right now. So the Washington Women's Leadership is one. And then I have the Merito Group. I have an online consignment retailer for plus size clothing. And I also am board chair and co-founder of Biopharma Global, which gets drugs approved for rare diseases by the FDA.
Oh my gosh. When do you sleep, Carolyn? That's what I'm sure myself
right.
And all of the listeners are thinking. Or do you sleep?
Barely. But yes, the Resell XL warehouse moved over the weekend to bigger space. So that was challenging this weekend. But you know, you have a lot of, you surround yourself with good people, you can get a lot done. So
that is amazing. Well, talk about what a great apropos subject then to be talking to you about growth. It sounds like throughout your whole career that you've created your own growth opportunities. So let's talk a little bit today about what do you do? Let's say that you are working at a temporary agency or a corporation or a law firm and you feel stagnant. What's the first step? How do you even begin to realign your career to something that you have more growth opportunity in?
Well, sometimes growth opportunity is there, but maybe you just don't realize it. So the first thing to do is to take the opportunity at an established review time to discuss it with your immediate supervisor and bring it up in a forum that's dedicated for your career and advancing you as an employee. You don't want to do is go in and just plop yourself in the chair and say, I need to talk to you. I need to be promoted. I want a raise. That's not the appropriate way to do it. So if the review cycle is not convenient, you can request a meeting, right? And say, I'd like to spend some time with you individually talking about my future career path and that sort of thing. So they have a heads up about what you want to talk about. But, and then you want to be prepared for that meeting. You know, preparing is probably the hardest part for a meeting like that. Getting it set is not that difficult. Preparing for it is probably the most difficult piece.
So what would somebody do in order to effectively prepare? Let's say they've scheduled an appropriate time with their manager or supervisor, whoever would be in charge of their promotion. And then what would be some steps someone could take in preparation for that meeting?
You want to make sure you have a clear understanding of what your supervisor or boss's expectations are of you, because newsflash, it's work for pay. So, you know, you are paid to do something and you need to make sure that you're delivering not only to meet the expectations, but to exceed them. And that's where a lot of people fail to have the connect made. There's a big disconnect a lot of times. Some people go for months and months and months thinking they're working really hard, they're doing a great job, when in the meantime, the supervisor's expectation is not getting met. And they're thinking, you know, here's an employee I really like, but they're just not getting there. You know, bringing that kind of stuff up to the forefront and be across the board and out there to discuss it is really a good thing to learn how to do early in your career.
So you brought up a good point. One thing that I know comes up a lot for me when I'm dealing with job seekers, and I'm sure it comes up for you as well, how do you do that in a way, speaking, whether it's the questions that you're asking, getting curious, in a way that isn't adversarial? Because I feel like a lot of people go into those meetings with kind of a demands list. It's kind of like, negotiations when you're trying to get people out of a bad situation, and people go in there and give these ultimatums, and then they wind up putting themselves in a very precarious position rather than setting themselves up for greater success. So how do you do that in a non-adversarial way?
Well, making sure that when you're given a project or you're on a team or you have a deliverable to do, being clear about what the expectation is that they have that would meet it, and then restating it back and then saying, so if I did this, this, and this, that would meet your expectation. And if I did this, that would exceed it, right? And maybe that's meeting a deadline by a certain date. Maybe that's delivering a certain amount of savings. Maybe that's delivering software to the client, you know, on a certain date that has to go live without any problems. And there's a lot of different ways that that can work. But some supervisors, particularly those that are sometimes known as being more difficult to work for, those people a lot of times are really great bosses, but they have a hard time explaining what their expectations are. So sometimes you have to draw it out of them. And taking responsibility for yourself to draw your supervisor out is a really good thing to start to learn how to do if you aren't already doing that, because that way it'll always be clear. And, you know, if your boss changes mid-project, that doesn't mean the deliverable is going to be the same for the next boss. So you have to make sure that you become well-versed in how to get these people to communicate really what they want, what meets the expectation, what exceeds it.
I think that's great advice, because it does, most of the upsets that I've noticed for people personally or professionally all come from a breakdown in communication. And I think a lot of it could be prevented if we did ask further clarifying questions before we got to the point where somebody is in danger of being fired or being passed up in that very case for a promotion. So tell me a little bit about this thing that we're facing right now in the market. I know you and I talked a little bit before the show about how you have a lot of these baby boomers and Gen Xers who are managing the millennials. How is that impacting growth opportunities in the workplace right now?
So there's two dynamics kind of pulling at each other. So one is the younger generation with less experience expects things at a faster pace. I was actually on the phone with somebody this afternoon from one of the top 10 companies in the country who's in charge of their internal executive coaching program. And we were talking about the way people learn now and the way degrees are being conferred is far different than the people who went to college in the 80s and 90s. You know, we started to see compressed classes so people could take a full 3-credit class in a week or two and get the full 3 credits, where previously you would have to enroll in 5 or 6 classes at once and take them for a full semester. So some of that learning and the way that has changed over the last 5 to 10 years, particularly with online learning as well, is really changing the face of the workforce and what their expectation is about getting promoted. There's a lot of very unrealistic views out there from our less experienced workforce about when they're ready to be promoted and take on more responsibility. And the gap is really the fact that they're not meeting the boss's expectations. You know, the supervisors who have more experience and who've worked their way up and have have been around the block a few times and seen a few business cycles, you know, they're working as hard as they can to meet the millennials' demands around technology and flexible work schedules and things like that. But you can't replace experience. You either you have it or you don't. So if you don't have the experience, you really have to start to listen. If someone tells you, listen, you know, slow down, you're going to get promoted, you're doing a good job, but you have to bide your time. You have to earn that. So if you hear that more than once from somebody, more than twice, then all of a sudden you need to really look in the mirror and say, hey, maybe my expectation is not realistic, because there's very few companies, smaller companies, you can assume more responsibility faster. Larger companies have more benefits and more opportunities for remote work and things like that and more defined career paths. You just have to earn that and go at a pace that's acceptable for that company, not necessarily what you think you should be doing because you hear other people are getting promoted somewhere else. It's really individual to the company.
Yeah, so I would love to play devil's advocate with you on this for a minute, because I think it's such a fascinating time that we're in, because I've interviewed people on both sides of the fence. Some people who say anything is possible. You know, one of my friends who was on the show probably 2 years ago, he had wanted to be the youngest guy to ever work at Google. And he was. He wound up being the youngest guy to ever get hired there and to go on to be very successful. How do you walk that fine line between telling somebody that you can be and do whatever you want and then telling them, but only in a confined time frame after you've put in 5 years? Because it's this kind of catch-22 where I feel like the people out there are getting mixed signals who are in the market right now. And half of the fence is saying, yeah, you can go out there and get promoted and make $100,000 right out the bat. And then you have the other half of the people who are saying, no, that's impossible. Until you put in your time, you're not going to be able to get there. What are your thoughts on the other side?
Well, sure. And you can't replace experience you don't have. So if you're able and lucky to be able to get some good experience that really will lend you to being an asset to someone, they're going to promote you. They're not going to let you flounder. The most important thing that anybody has is their human capital. But this all goes back to expectations, right? So if you aren't exceeding the supervisor's expectations, you're not going to get promoted faster. And that really is the issue. If you set a goal for yourself and you want to accomplish something like being the youngest employee at Google, you can absolutely do that, right? And that person's probably, if you think about them and their work habits and some of their core values, they're probably really good at pinpointing what meets and exceeds someone's expectations. And if they exceed them faster, they're going to get promoted faster. Because they're not going to let a resource that's an amazing resource languish somewhere. They're going to give them more responsibility once they've proven that they can assume the responsibility they've been given previously. Does that make sense?
That makes perfect sense. So if I'm hearing you correctly, I think what I heard you say is it's less of a timing thing. Like you have to put in 2, 5, 10 years. It's quality over quantity. So if you get really high level exposure to a certain level of skill that's going to be a required skill or make you an asset or make you a desirable applicant in the market, you're going to have a much higher, quicker trajectory than somebody who doesn't have that skill or somebody who might have to put in 5 years to get that same amount of experience. Is that correct?
Right. Right. Yeah. And some people, you know, there's also a difference between people who worked when they were getting educated and people who went straight through the education process with no work experience. I think that's also a clear distinction to draw. So there are some people who come, you know, entry-level people come out of college that have traveled all summer and done all kinds of things and never had a job, right? There are other people who have worked every single summer, you know, which by the time you're done with college in 4 to 6 years, whatever your time frame is, you know, or a master's degree, that experience adds up. And there's a lot of people who work part-time through school. After they get an internship, the company can't part with them. They love them, so they allow the student to stay on and do things. And all of a sudden now, when you graduate, you could have 2, 3, 4 years of work experience where someone else who didn't do that has none. So the person who gets that starts to understand the workflow, starts to understand the political dynamics of an office, how that works. The basic P's and Q's of being polite and working in teams and things like that, that otherwise you would just get on the job after you graduated. You know, and now, you know, there's a lot of jobs you don't even have to graduate, right? So to be effective and to get somewhere. So there's a lot of different sides to every story, but at the end of the day, people who get promoted are those who exceed the expectations. It's not the people who don't meet them.
Yeah, that's a great point. So let's say, now here's a question again to play devil's advocate with you. Let's say you sit down with your boss. We go back to your earlier example. You schedule a time with whoever your supervisor is. He or she sits down with you and says, gosh, you know, I would love to, you know, move up in my career and take that next step up. And the boss says, I'm sorry, there's just not the opportunity to do so. Is that indicative then of a lack of experience or lack of meeting your goals? Or in some cases, does it actually just mean that there's not adequate room for upward mobility in that organization? How do you ascertain what the difference is there?
Yeah, ask for the clarity on that. So are you telling me that I'm not able or ready to take more responsibility, or that there isn't an opportunity for me to do that, right? So because within a job, even if you're working for a company, and all the positions are filled, you know, at a larger company, it's not often looked upon that you could overstep your bounds into someone else's job. But there's a lot of opportunities to raise your hand for things when a group needs more help, or someone goes out on a medical leave. That's a great time to raise your hand and say, I'll take on some of that work that my coworker is doing while they're gone. Right. That's a great way to stretch yourself. So in a small company, this happens every day. You can stretch yourself every single day in a smaller corporation. So there's not as much definition between what's one person's job and what's the next person's job. You know, overlapping is almost you know, looked upon very favorably, as opposed to, hey, they're stepping into my zone here. That's really my responsibility. A larger company, that can happen sometimes. Depends on what you do, but you know, you don't want to overstep your bounds with your team or another group. So you can also, in a larger company, if you need to get some skills, volunteering is a great way to do it. Getting some experience outside of your organization, particularly in a leadership position. So say, for example, I'm a member of the National Speakers Association, and I've actually been on the board a couple of times. So, and I'm on 5 boards now, and that is a great way to be able to assume responsibility, lead projects, see things through to completion, take on initiatives and things you have no experience in. For example, one of the boards I'm on has a very large real estate component to it. I have never worked in real estate, and it's a large multi-million-dollar facility real estate, you know, beyond my houses that I own and whatnot. I don't know anything. I know very little about the HVAC systems and things like that. This has been a great opportunity for me to learn about that. So, and zoning and building and all the things that have to go on this one board, because it's got a real estate component to it. So that's a great example of being able to pick something up outside of my work that I would have never been able to do had I not joined that board.
Yeah, I think that's great advice. I remember when I was 25, I got offered the opportunity to be chairperson of the American Wine Society, and that kind of threw me into a leadership role where I had no idea how to manage 2 sticks, and then to start to streamline things and learn what it's like, how to execute plans and follow through. It definitely taught me a lot. I would love your 2 cents on where you would recommend. I know general volunteering opportunities, there's lots. I think there's a great website out there. It might be called volunteermatch.com, if I'm not mistaken. But from a standpoint, where would you suggest getting involved with different boards? Because I think it could be very valuable for a lot of people out there.
Well, you could start in your immediate circle, whether that's at your church or at a school that you've attended. You know, your alumni board is a good place to start in whatever market that you're in for the schools that you went to. You can go to the local hospitals, nursing homes, the homeowners association. You know, there's lots of different ways to start at the beginning of that. Any membership organization has a local board. So the National Association of Realtors, you know, they all have realtors in every state. You know, there's a lot of different types of membership and cause-oriented organizations. The cause-oriented organizations are ones that are going to require more fundraising, right? The membership organizations, there might be some fundraising for some of their charity work, but that's actually more about managing groups and delivering things within the governance that was set up for the organization and making sure that the organization is fulfilling its charter.
Yeah, that's, I think that's wonderful advice because it, to get out there, I know for me personally, especially for anybody out there, maybe you really are feeling stagnant in not only your career, but your industry. I know there's a lot of folks out there who are considering a radical change and redirecting what industry they're going to pursue. And when I started off in recruiting, I didn't know if I wanted to do that forever. And as I gained this experience being on the board for a couple of years in the Wine Society, all of a sudden you can add that volunteer experience and you could put it at the top or the bottom of your resume, depending on what you want your focal point to be. And I started applying for wine jobs about 14 years ago. And it was a great learning opportunity for me to go, oh, okay, well, now that I have this experience, if I chose to, I could have leveraged that into a position in the wine and food world had I pursued it at that time.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. And what are your thoughts? Because I know you wrote this book, Resumazing. Where would you put that on your resume if somebody out there had some volunteer experience that they wanted to highlight because either it was something they weren't doing in their current job or a new industry that they wanted to transition into?
So you can call your experience section relevant experience and put your volunteer work first if the dates line up. You can also put it in its own section, volunteer community and civic activities. And you want to make sure that you're detailing the skills that you sought to find and that you intend to carry forward. You know, people are going to hire somebody to do what they've done in the last 5 years, really. So they're not going to go back way, they're not going to go back 20 years. No, you know, no one ever calls you as a recruiter saying, hey, send me somebody who has this experience 20 years ago so I can hire them. That never comes out of anyone's mouth. So you have to really think about the first page of your resume. If you have a two-page resume, is the most important. And the keywords that you're using really need to speak to the job that you're trying to get. So there's a lot of different ways you can dice and slice words and change the words to be attractive to someone in a certain industry. So some people might call budgeting forecasting. Some people, you know, might call variance analysis strategic planning, right? So, you know, there's a lot of different ways that people reterm things, and that changes year over year as well. There are trends in industries. You know, KPIs, key performance indicators, are now metrics dashboards. Right. So it's the same thing, but they're just calling it something different because it's got a new name. Because I don't know, because Salesforce called it that or something. Who knows where that all came from? But that's what we see as recruiters, that things change over time, but still they're using the same skills that they would be using in either of those roles.
Yeah, I think that that's good advice. And one of my favorite tips to people is look up your competition on LinkedIn, see what their titles are, see what sort of jobs that you could potentially go after. Because I think sometimes people stagnate when it comes to growth because they don't even know what's next. They don't even have a clear vision. It's more moment by moment. They're just enmeshed in the day-to-day of this is survival. I can only do this. And I think it's the people who have the larger vision of where they want to take their career and can see 3 steps ahead that are able to then maneuver themselves almost like playing a game of, you know, chess, where they can see that 3 steps ahead, they want to be here or there. Perfect example, my husband took a position a couple of years ago, and it was a lower level job than what he had done before, but he loved the industry. And I told him, I was like, honey, take it, because here's the thing, would you rather be in a lower level title job doing something you love and then get in there and prove yourself, or be in an industry that you hate with a high level title? And I tell job seekers this all the time. And in his case, within a short period of 2 years, he was promoted 4 times and is now one of the, you know, top people at the company. And I think it's important to remember that sometimes when you're thinking strategically, it's not just about the immediate title that you're applying for. You want to look 4 steps ahead and go, okay, well, what if in 6 months, 2 years, or 5 years, I might be able to reach X or Y achievable goal?
Exactly. There was a gentleman I placed in the 90s. I placed him as a financial analyst for, I don't know if you remember Nextel, right? The phone company. And he started in the finance group. When Nextel formed itself, it was 4 companies that merged together and they created a headquarters in the Washington, D.C. area. And we placed a lot of people in accounting and finance there. And one of the guys started as a senior financial analyst, and he was hired by a manager of finance who subsequently became a director. And the manager, the senior financial analyst, moved up to the manager, and then he transferred departments for another job, right? Another leadership role in another department. It he was the most amazing person because in 15 years he worked for that company. He was promoted 12 times.
Wow. And I just, oh, my goodness.
Right. And that was a big company. It was a good sized company at the time. So he was able, he actually surpassed the guy that hired him. So he became that guy's peer in less than 4 years. And then ultimately was the one who laid him off.
Oh,
right.
Wow.
It was a classic example of, he figured out what he needed to know and what was required to meet the expectations of the next job. And he sought out all the opportunities he could for continuing education and conference learning and certifications. And he networked up very well. He made his allegiances with the people at the level above him so that when the jobs were available, they came to him and said, we want you to take this job, right? We want to put you in this job. So he didn't really have to go market himself internally. He had already done that. He was very, very good at it. Now he heads up a nonprofit in San Francisco, but I thought that was a great example. And that's what a lot of people, they get upset they don't get asked, but they don't really force, you know, come right out and say, what's it going to take for me to get here? Because that's a scary question for people to ask a lot of times. But people will tell you if you ask them, right? So if you want to know what it's going to take to get to the next level, ask the people who are the gatekeepers of that, your supervisors and even, you know, a mentor within the company may know. You know, it depends on the programs that are set up where you work, but there's a lot of ways you can get the information that you need in order to move ahead without having to leave the company. You know, people who leave companies because they're unhappy are just setting themselves up for being unhappy somewhere else, honestly, because they didn't deal with the problem that they left, because they ran away from the problem rather than dealing with it.
Okay, I have to stop you there because I want to ask you some questions about that. So if mm-hmm. I heard you correctly, you just said that you're better off to work at the company that you're at, solve whatever problems there are, and work your way upwards in that company rather than perhaps just changing jobs every 6 months, 3 years, 5 years because of dissatisfaction, if I heard you correctly?
Mm-hmm. If there really isn't an opportunity for you to do the next thing, then absolutely you should leave. Or another company comes calling on you because of your expertise and your reputation. They want you to take on a role because you've proven yourself to be good at something, right? People recruit people out all the time because people have a good reputation. But if you're unhappy with your boss or you're unhappy with the circumstances, you know, you have to really take a hard look at that and say, you know, is it reasonable to think that another job at another company isn't going to make me feel the same way? Because there's no rule in the world that says your boss has to be nice to you, right? There's no rule book that says this. So leaving a boss that you don't like or you aren't necessarily getting along that well with doesn't mean you have to leave the company. Now, sometimes it does because you've gotten a bad review and you're on a performance improvement plan and you're 1 foot out the door already. And they're just showing you where the exit door is, right? That's possible. But if you learn how to work with people and how to adapt to them, because you can't change other people, you can only change yourself. If you figure out how to do that and to work with people to meet their expectations, you're never going to have a boss you can't work with. It just won't happen because you're very good at working with other people at that point.
Yeah, it's funny that you say that because we see it so often on the recruitment side on our end is that somebody's job history might include what we call their reasons for leaving. And you will sometimes see the person who has the same exact reason that they've left every company. My boss was a jerk, my coworkers were mean to me, or whatever the situation might have been. And sure, there might be a kernel of truth in that. But then you start to ask yourself, is this person making bad judgment calls? And I've even had clients say that to me when I've submitted a resume and the reasons for leaving were along the same lines time and time again. It causes an employer to pause, have a potential red flag and say, well, why is James making the same poor life choices that he made 3 years ago, 5 years ago, and 10 years ago? And then it really brings into question, is this the sort of person that we want on our team?
Absolutely. If you have as a work person and a person in the workforce, if you're leaving more than one job for the same reason, it's not the job. It's you.
I think that's true of relationships too. I think I've heard relationship experts perhaps say the same thing. It's not me, it's you.
It's true, though.
No, it really is you.
Right. It's not me, it's you. Right. And you know, and that's where you have to take a hard look at yourself. I mean, that's really a conflict resolution thing. Right. So, you know, all conflict is either functional or dysfunctional. So conflict that's functional is conflict that's in alignment with your core values. Conflict that's dysfunctional is conflict that's in misalignment with your core values. So if you're in the same situation and you're getting the same, you know, it's like the, what's the saying? The, where you repeat the same thing over and over, you expect a different outcome,
insanity.
Right?
Insanity is expecting a different outcome. Yes.
It's the same thing. And we do see habitual job hoppers, and you're right. They will say the same thing. Oh, they misrepresented the job to me. That's my favorite. You know, they misrepresented the job, and this job wasn't what they said it was when I interviewed. You know, you can buy that once in your career, right? You know, and you should be a better interviewer if that's happening to you more than once. And that really is the thing. It's never anybody's fault themselves. Right. They never take the responsibility individually when that's really where it lies. It isn't about what other people are doing to you. It's about what you're not doing for yourself.
Yeah, I think that for anybody out there who's considering making a move or in transition, I think that how you approach your reasons for leaving can be a make or break situation for you in the job market. Because if you go out there and say that you're looking for that next step up, it's funny because we're talking about growth. I'm going to diverge here for one moment. The thing that I have found personally for employers that can scare them when a job applicant says it is if I'm looking for more growth or more of a challenge, if they're not specific in what that would look like, that can be a deal breaker for a lot of corporations or law firms in my case, because more of a challenge is this vague, intangible, more growth sort of a thing that what does that really mean? Versus if you actually talk about something specific, that a job duty that's missing in position A that would be available in position B, that's something tangible that an employer can wrap their head around. You know, I want to be managing two people. I'm one now. That's something specific as opposed to this vague catch-all of more growth. What are your thoughts on utilizing the term more growth as a reason for leaving?
So again, more growth is so individualized, right? So that can be, if you're looking for more growth, and the word more is a different definition for you than it is for me. So the first thing you have to know is what that means to you. Does that mean a new job title? Does that mean more responsibility? Does that mean you're going to learn a new system? What does that mean? What does more growth mean? Is that more money, right? There's a definition that everybody has to that. So once you determine what that is for you, it's better not to use a term that's so vague, but rather put that into the context of what's in it for the company, right? So you want more growth, but how does that translate into what you're going to do for the company? Because it's really not about what the company's going to do for you, right? If that was it, then we'd be paying to go work there, right? So we'd be paying them to have us there. That's not what happens. So, you know, you have to really think about what's in it for them, not just what's in it for you. You want this because you feel that that's going to get you ahead, or it's going to get you to the next level, or it's going to get you more money, or going to get you a better work environment or a better schedule or whatever. It's in it for you. But what's in it for them, right? What's more growth in it for them? Are you going to be more efficient? Are you going to be a higher contributing member of something? Are they going to make more money? Are they going to save more money? You know, what does that mean? You know, it's growth is it, more growth, and those types of terms are so vague. So determine what's the more concrete thing. There's usually something concrete behind it. Going and asking for more money, and this came up this afternoon with the person I was talking to before you and I started talking. She had a guy working for her at the top, one of the top 10 companies in the country, and she told me that he came in and said, I'm really disappointed because I really thought I would be making more money by now. He'd been there 6 months.
And
she said, well, you know, your review, you had a good review, you know, you're on the right track, things are going well, you know, you shouldn't be disappointed. And he said, well, I really thought by this time in my life, I'd be making six figures. And she said, well, you really are making six figures if you add in the bonus and the value of the stock options and all the stuff that you have, you're in a six figure package. It's just your salary isn't at the six figure mark. And that just wasn't good enough. Right. Mm-hmm. That person just did not think that was right for them. And they ended up moving departments and leaving the company within a year because the company just didn't have that fast of a growth path for someone, and that person's definition of growth in this case was money. And it came down to the fact that, well, I bought a new house and I got married and now we want to start a family. That's not why someone pays you more money. Right? That has nothing to do with the job. That has nothing to do with assuming responsibility. That has nothing to do with anything that has to do with your personal life. Right? So using that argument to try to get ahead, get promoted, get more money, never works very well for anybody.
Yeah, I have noticed over the years, and this has been a huge issue in recent past, particularly I would say in the last 5 years or so, is entitlement and demanding more money. And what I found personally has happened is sometimes when an applicant goes in demanding more money, acting entitled, sometimes they do get the offer, which surprises me every time, but then they set themselves up for failure from an expectation standpoint because, sure, you can go into any job you want and ask for $100,000 or however much you're looking for, but the problem is, are you going to be able to provide $100,000 or more worth of value to that organization? And I think that that's where one of the big disconnects is and takes it back to your earlier point. There are people who get passed up for promotions and they feel sorry for themselves or they feel like it's not fair. Why haven't I gotten the raise or promotion when Jim or Jane or Susie did? And what's really happening is that person is not willing to own their value in the organization and to stand up for themselves. And then they become bitter and resentful towards the people who do stand up and ask for more money or more opportunity.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you know, companies can be cliquish, right? And if you're not in the clique that's doing well, and if you're the one who's going out to lunch with the people who are getting average to below average reviews, and you're not with the people who are the high performers, and they're not in, the high performing people are not inviting you to things, and you're not in that social circle, that's a hard thing you have to look at. You know, because they are the high performing people that are going to get promoted. You know, it's the same thing with the bell curve when you're in college, right? Or in high school. You know, most of the people hang out in the middle. You know, it's a pyramid. There's fewer jobs at the top. So obviously people are going to fall off as they move up because they have to. There's not as many jobs at the top as there are at the middle or the bottom. If there was, it would be an upside down pyramid, right? So sure. Working your way to the top is working your way to the top of the pyramid. But, the whole concept of, you know, how can you make sure that you're not associating with the people who are complaining? I mean, how many times have you heard somebody start complaining about something and they're like, oh, what do you think? And people try to suck you into their misery. Really, that is something you really have to avoid if you want to be somebody who's going to be looked at as a future leader, because it's the gossip train. And a lot of people get stuck on the gossip train. And once you're on it, it is hard to get off.
Yeah, there's a fun exercise that I have people do in a workshop that I love because I even do it for myself and it really puts me in perspective on things. And that is to spend one day with your either iPhone or smartphone or a piece of paper with you and just make like a little tick or a little mark every time you complain, every time you justify, and every time you blame. And it's not to make yourself wrong or judge yourself or anybody else. It's just to get present to what's it like to be with you for 24 hours. And even if you want to take it a step further, to do that within your own head of like, how many times do I internally complain, justify, or blame somebody without, you know, even saying it? And then you just start to get a sense of, wow, what is it like to work with me? What is it like to be with me? And then that takes us into a whole other conversation about personal development. Mm-hmm. And I found a lot of the people who have done personal development work, worked with an executive coach like yourself, or done any sort of workshops to better themselves, tend to make more money, have more growth opportunities, and be more successful because they're more aware, self-aware of how they come across in the world, if that makes sense.
And, you know, being positive and driving towards your future is a choice people can make every day. There are so many things that I could sit and worry about every single day of the week and every hour of the day, but I have a conscious choice to not do that. My conscious choice is to work and focus on the things I can control and what I can accomplish in a day that's going to advance me to the next day, right? It's not sitting and worrying and fretting and losing sleep over something that I don't have any control over anyway, that's going to happen or not happen, whether or not I do anything about it or not, right? There's so many other things that you can focus on that are positive. Instead of complaining about the things that aren't going right, focus on the things that you have control over and positive, and then people will know you as that.
I agree, is then that becomes your brand in the world. Well, Carolyn, you've given us so many great, wonderful things to talk about today. What would be a couple takeaways? What are a couple things that you would love the listeners to walk away with today?
I think the big concept of you can't change other people, you can only change how you interact with them, is a really important factor for anybody in the workplace, because there are going to be people who push your buttons. There are going to be people who, say things or do things that you don't like. And it really is your ability to take that in, absorb it, and not immediately react and not send off an email in all caps because you're angry at someone. Really stop and think about it and say, you know, what if that message was coming from someone else? Is this person speaking to the other people like this? You know, because you will outlast people who are unfriendly to other people and who don't treat people with respect. They will move on. The company will move them on. You just have to be, you can't get sucked into that negativity. You have to hold strong in what your core values are and treat other people well. Even if people may not be treating you the way you want to be treated, you can treat other people the way you want to be treated. And that person ultimately who's bothering you, they usually do get moved on. But you have to be strong and able to see that. And that comes with some experience, right? Once you see this happen a couple times, you start to recognize the signs of that.
Yeah, brilliant, brilliant advice. Well, I want to make sure everybody knows where they can find your books, if they want to work with you, your executive search team, or your executive coaching capacity, or perhaps even hire you as a speaker. Where would people find information about you?
I have a personal website, carolynthompson.net, but you can always also reach me through the Merito Group, which is meritogroup.com, MERITO group.com.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Carolyn. As always, if you miss any portion of the show, you can find it immediately available for download after the show on the LA Talk Radio archive section of the website for Get Yourself the Job. We also invite you to subscribe and listen at your leisure on iTunes under Get Yourself the Job on iTunes. Rate us, leave us comments. We always appreciate your feedback, and or interact with us on our Get Yourself the Job Facebook page. So thank you so much for joining us today, Carolyn, and tune in next week as we speak with Dr. Randy Bell.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.